You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Mark Shea, and we are here again, back again. And today, of course, is a very special day, particularly if you're a, for example, a Tim Burton fan. Very important day. Very important day if you like Ray Bradbury.
Yes.
Very important day. Halloween. Welcome.
Happy Halloween.
It is, the day before All Saints Day.
And All Saints Day.
Yes. We're here today with Sherry Antonetti.
Hello, hello.
Thought we would just spend a little time talking Halloween and also talking Saints because they go together like
they do. You can't do one without the other. But I love Halloween. It is one of my favorite holidays. You know, before it was nerdy cool to cosplay and stuff, I would start like in August planning my costumes.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
You're a total zealot.
See, I was.
One of those guys that, like, you know, Halloween morning, I would think, what can I do? Well, here's a hat. That's good enough.
Oh, no. See, I would get like fake hair and makeup and go the whole nine yards.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Well, I was a nerd before nerding was cool.
All right. And so the whole cosplay thing, you know, it's fun. I got a friend here. She's young. She's about 17, goes to our parish. I've known her family for many moons now. And she's totally, you know, into the whole, you know, Bimon sci-fi con thing.
Yes.
And she last year she went to whatever Comic-Con was here in Seattle. We've got one. And she dressed as Agent Carter.
Okay.
I gotta tell you, she killed as Agent Carter. She did it just right. She was really good.
That is awesome.
Yeah. You know, I went to one of the first science fiction conventions that was ever held in Seattle back in the late 70s when these things were like just getting off the ground.
I bet that was fun. Oh, my gosh.
Well, it was actually kind of lame, but I did have there was one thing that I thought was pretty cool was that. Golly, who was it? It was like the guy that played Buck Rogers in the 1930s serials came to this thing.
Oh, my goodness.
And he was, you know, he was pretty old by this time. But it was, it was one of those kind of amazing things. But this was before, like, the cast of Star Trek, it really hadn't dawned on them that they were a thing yet.
Right.
And no. So they weren't showing up for these things yet, but... And the rest of it just didn't exist. The whole, you know, it hadn't begun. The person that really got this going was a guy named Forrest Ackerman.
Okay.
Forrest Ackerman invented fandom. And he was this guy that lived in L.A. And he was a nut for science fiction fantasy stuff when nobody else was.
Right. And, when you had to kind of be closeting and overplaying D&D at somebody's house so that no one would know that you played D&D.
This is before D&D. This is back in the 30s. This is back in the late 30s and 40s. And two of his sort of acolytes and they sort of all fed off of each other were Ray Bradbury and Ray Harryhausen.
Oh, my goodness. Wow.
And so it's just like present at the creation, you know. But anyway, you were saying about for Halloween.
Yes. Well, my whole family, everybody dresses up. Everybody spends a lot of time thinking about their costumes, what they're going to be. It's just always a really important part of our lives. And like, you know, some of the best costumes came because we're all nerds. So like when my son at 4 decided to be Spider-Man, my husband dressed up as Doc Ock. And,
oh, really?
Yes, and you never have tentacles been so lovingly held onto as when they went trick-or-treating. It was awesome.
Really? That's so great. So yeah. What do you make the arms out of, like tin cans or something?
He went to Home Depot and got some like gutter drain pipe thingies that, you know, that you used to drain water around, and he put them underneath his raincoat. So he went with the old style Doc Op.
Okay. All right.
It was great.
That's pretty good. Did he have like the bowl haircut and the round glasses and stuff?
He got the glasses. He did the glasses and he pushed his hair up so it stuck up. So
okay.
We went all out.
That's good. That's good. So what are your kids doing this year?
Well, I've got a Pikachu. I've got Link from Legends of Zelda. I do have one kid who's too cool to dress up, and he never dresses up. So he just carves the munchkins and gives out the candy.
Okay.
The 17-year-old can't do that.
Yeah.
And then I have a ranger, and then I have a judge. I love that. Her godfather's a judge, so she's a judge. She's got a gavel and everything. And then I've got Captain America riding a dinosaur. There you go.
Okay, that's good.
And a genie. And then I'm Mother Gothel from Tangled. I'm the villain. I'm not projecting. I just want to be able to say Mother knows best and get away with it.
Okay.
So.
Great, now I'm the bad guy.
You bet, you bet. Don't be a dummy. Stay with mummy.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because we have a friend who is, she's East Indian American. So,
okay.
Her dad's from India. And jet black hair and long. And she looks like the villainess. She does, you know? And it's like. Yeah, so that was pretty funny, you know.
That's great.
I thought, that looks like Angela, don't you think? And Jan was like, well, yeah, I guess it kind of does, actually.
I do wish I had thought of it last year when my daughter, that's a judge, was Rapunzel, because then it would have been perfect. We could have really had some fun with that. But,
That's good.
She looks like Rapunzel after she cut her hair.
Okay. That's cool. So do you guys, I mean, you've got a big tribe.
Yes.
So do you go to mass on Halloween and then like go off and trick or treat afterwards, or do you go to mass tomorrow?
We go to mass tomorrow. There's no way I want to take sugar-coated kids to mass. It's just,
Well, I figure you might take them before they got sugar-coated, you know.
Well, no, I some of them go to mass because they go to Catholic school, and then the rest of us are going to go in the evening, and that's how we're going to handle that.
Okay.
It used to be easy because when all of them went to Catholic school, I would just go and show up, and it would be easy. But now they're at different places, so it's a little more work.
Okay.
But we've always loved Halloween, and part of that is that, you know, you dress up as something you're not, and part of it is just, I love chocolate, so I will do almost anything for chocolate. So I was only too happy to go and dress up. But as a kid, I actually got scared of some of the costumes. I don't think I could have handled Halloween with how seriously it's taking now. If I had seen some of the costumes that are out there, I would have freaked out and had nightmares.
I'm not sure. We don't get a lot of trick-or-treaters where we live just because of whatever. I'm not really clear why we don't get all that many trick-or-treaters. But most of the costumes seem kind of pedestrian.
Well, I mean, there used to be, there was a zombie craze, and now there's a kind of crazy clown craze, and those are kind of creepy. And I only know this because I took my kids to a haunted maze this past weekend. 12-year-olds were having a birthday party, and so we saw a lot of people dressed for Halloween early. And yeah, they're going to a haunted house place, but there was a lot more gore than I remembered.
A lot more gore. That's true. Yeah. I worked in a haunted house.
Really?
In high school, that we did like this. It was like this community thing. Like this radio station put this thing on. It was to raise money for some charity. I can't remember what.
Right.
And so they, you know, they got this old warehouse or something, and they just kind of did it up and turned it into a haunted house. And then I was, you know, mostly it was like you would lurk in a dark corner and then you would jump out and say boo. And or, you know, some other thing. And there was like a whole bunch of different rooms that you walked through. And there was some
electric chair, the hall,
fire,
the werewolf
scene. And and all of that.
Boris
and
Karloff.
You know, it was lots of like clingy girls holding onto their boyfriend's arm and the boyfriend stoically not being scared.
Yes. Yes.
Well, it was lots of fun. I had a good time.
You see, you don't realize how brave you are, because see, I was a super chicken and I would go into haunted houses. I dared my brother and I dared each other to do brave things. And one of them, I went into the haunted house and I figured I would just keep my eyes shut the entire time. Okay. And then I wouldn't be scared. But somebody kept tapping me on the shoulder. And so I finally turned around, opened my eyes and looked and saw a person in a mask. And I punched them in the nose. Well, the guy took off his mask. He's like cursing at me. And then I'm start laughing. So I come out of the haunted house laughing. And my brother thinks I'm the bravest person in the history of the world.
Was your brother older than you or younger than you?
Younger. We were like, we were like in, you know, seventh grade and fifth. And so this is one of those cat dog kind of relationships where you have to. General animosity.
Yeah. They did these things, you know, all the time I was growing up. And it was, we'll talk about it when we return. Okay. You're listening to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea. We're here today with Sherry Antonetti.
Hello.
Observing Halloween and the Feast of All Saints. We'll be back right after this.
Excellent day.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Hello, and welcome back to the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea. And we are here today with Sherry Antonetti. We're talking about all things Halloween and
trick or treat.
Saintly and All Souls, too. Figure we roll it all together in one big sticky, sugary gob.
Connecting the Dots, the vigil version.
That's right. You know, there's certain things that I associate with Halloween, things that I remember. I remember I had the costume, for some reason, that sticks in my mind from when I was a kid was Casper the Ghost. I had a Casper the Ghost mask that I wore, and you would wear a bed sheet, you know, and do that. And I remember just the fun of, you know, I get to be outside running around in the dark after dark on, this is way after my bedtime, you know?
Right.
And I'm getting to do that. So that's a thrill. But I remember the Casper the Ghost mask, because it was made of plastic and it chafed my face. There was like this little slit for a mouth hole and little slits for eyes, and you couldn't see where you were going.
Yeah.
And it's dark, you know, on top of everything else, it's dark.
Right.
And so we'd mill around the neighborhood and we'd go to these houses, and you would get the candies that I remember. They were never like things that I really wanted. It was always Tootsie Rolls, which I didn't really care for, and candy corn, which I totally didn't care for.
Nobody likes candy corn. It's an abomination.
I did like Reese's Pieces. Reese's, or you know, like Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. Those were good. I saved those. And but we also you inevitably wound up with like Chick Tracks.
Yeah, Bit of Honeys. Who eats Bit of Honeys? No.
Yeah. Yeah. But did you ever get Chick Tracks when you were a kid?
Got Chicklets.
No. Chick Tracts are these tracks by this guy named Jack Chick, who was like, he's the guy that put the fun in fundamentalism. So
he
did all these tracks, and it was always about you know, the end times, or else it was about the Catholic conspiracy to kill us all.
Or the kids involved in
D&D because then that leads into, you know, the occult and all the rest of it.
I think my dad introduced us to D&D just because of that.
Because of I didn't play D&D, but I remember some of these lurid tracts. And so later on, much later, because I'd never read the Bible. I had not been baptized, had never been to church when I was a kid. So it was like, these are... I don't have any idea what all this stuff is about, but this is kind of lurid and weird.
Yes.
You know? And, Chick just died at 91. So yes, when I was running around, he must have been like about 51 drawing these cartoons. But there was something just wonderful and exhilarating about running around in the dark.
Yes.
And getting to, you know, knock on the doors of all the neighbor houses. And you didn't really know these people all that well. And everybody was always so, oh, look at you, you're a ghost. And they would be super charming and adorable. And that's what I remember about it, was just that kind of exhilaration of getting to run around in the dark on an October night. And plus you get candy at the end.
Yeah, no, that's what I remember, too. It really was wonderful. And we had some great neighbors who really went all out. Like my preschool teacher lived next door to us. Mm-hmm. And so she would always make, this is before they didn't allow it, she would always make some homemade baked fantastic thing, like homemade popcorn balls or stained glass windows, or whether it's chocolate with multicolored marshmallows and it's rolled in coconut, or candy apples or caramel apples. And so you always wanted to go to Mrs. Alfred's first.
Okay.
You know, so
now, wait a second. They didn't. How can they not allow things for Halloween?
People kind of, because somebody put some not nice person put razor blades in apples, everybody stopped doing homemade goodies.
Okay. Yeah, it's always one jackass that screws everything up for everybody else.
Yeah. No, but I mean, they just said, you know, nobody gives out homemade goodies anymore because I think they're afraid that someone's going to think they're trying to poison their kids. So,
yeah, I wonder how much that was like urban legends and stuff, because you hear these terrible things. And the internet makes it really easy to spread these stories super fast.
Right.
You know? No. So we all, you know, everybody knows that millions of people are, you know, cheating at the polling booth somehow magically, you know. And in reality, there's like this one dork that did it, you know. And
full
of fake ballots, yeah.
Well, I mean, I always wondered, like, okay, how much worse is it to take all of your candy to the hospital and have them x-ray it? maybe we'll just open it and see if it looks like it has extra crunchy bits in it,
And there's always the, you know, that somebody sprinkled LSD on this, you know, and
yes,
and that led them, you know, into the occult, you know, you get all that stuff, you know.
Yes.
But with Halloween goes All Saints Day.
All Saints Day, yes.
And one of the fun things for me, having become Catholic, was not long after I became, actually before I became Catholic, we had our first son. And then not long after I'd become Catholic, we had our second son. And as they got older, you know, another fun thing as a Catholic was you could dress up as a saint and get to be an expert on that saint. And do you do that with your guys?
Yes, they do that at the Catholic school that my kids have attended. The fourth graders all dress up as saints. And so that would be kind of a rite of passage to be a saint in fourth grade. They all would get to do that.
Ah, okay. What kind of fave saints do they have?
Well, we've had Saint Brent. Part of it is how creative can I get with the costume for them, and what do they want? I had Saint Brendan, and that was fun because we had to have a compass, and so that was kind of cool for him. And then I've had Saint John the Baptist. I've had Saint Barbara, which was really interesting because she picked her of her own free will, and she's kind of the inspiration for the Rapunzel story, if you go and read it, which I didn't know. She was her father built a tower and put her in it because he didn't want her to convert.
Okay.
and she worked on the tower on the windows so that she would be able to make it into kind of a chapel.
Okay.
And she was very beautiful. And so there was a lot of, so when we were reading about St. Barbara, we discovered all these parallels to Rapunzel. And that was kind of an interesting little sideline for us to discover. So
did her stepmother look like my friend Angela, though? That's the real question.
No, but I am going as Mother Gothel this year for Halloween. So that will be fun, you know.
Okay.
Dagger. I have to crimp my hair. That's what I have to do. Make it all curly.
Okay. That'll be good. So I like doing that. And we've had little, saint processions before mass and things like that. And we gave a presentation one year. I was Cyril and another guy was Methodius, and we, told our life stories, and so we learned a little bit about Cyril and Methodius. And it's a lovely way to
make friends with a saint.
Of course, one of the nice things about All Saints Days is you get to find out not only about the deeply inspiring saints, the Saint Peter Claver who ministered to slaves and stuff like that, but the great thing about our tradition is filled with saints who, if they lived today, might have wound up getting committed.
Yeah. We have all comers.
But who were still saints. I mean, they were amazing guys. Saint Benedict Joseph Lebray, for example, is a 18th century saint. He was mentally ill. It's actually who Saint, one of these days, who Benedict Groeschel, Father Benedict Groeschel, took his name in religion from Saint Benedict Joseph Lebray.
Oh my goodness!
And he did it because he was mentally ill, and Father Benedict Groeschel wanted to minister to people who had mental and emotional problems. And his whole point was that Benedict Joseph Lebray was mentally ill, but that didn't stop him from being a saint.
That is heroic.
So he wandered around pilgrimage sites and so forth. And he would have been indistinguishable from any homeless person that you meet today.
Okay.
And so eventually he made his way to Rome. And he was always seen at the various churches and pilgrimage sites praying. And among other things, he was known for levitating when he was praying before the Eucharist. And Father Benedict Groeschel said there were stories about him. Because he would come into the churches very early in the morning before anybody else got there. And on at least one occasion, somebody walked into the church. Oh, well, I'll finish the story about seeing.
To be continued.
And it's pretty funny. We'll be back here on Connecting the Dots with Sherry Antonetti, talking about saints and Halloween and all of that right after this on Connecting the Dots here on Redbox Media.
Yes.
You are listening to Redbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at redboxmedia.com. Redbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Hello, and welcome back to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea, and we are here today with Sherry Antonetti. We're talking about Halloween and All Saints and all of that. I was saying before the break, I was telling a little story about St. Benedict Joseph LeBray. St. Benedict Joseph LeBray, among other things, was graced with the grace of levitation when he was praying before the Eucharist, which he found, as saints who have endured that particular grace in the past, found embarrassing. There was another, probably the most famous saint that this happened to was Joseph of Cupertino, who actually went on after his death to become, yes, the patron saint of pilots.
Really? Oh my gosh.
And so it happened to both of them, but there's a story about a pilgrim who came into one of the churches in Rome early in the morning and found Benedict suspended above the floor, about 5 feet above the floor, praying in ecstasy before the tabernacle. And a janitor who worked in the church, who just somehow, this just seems so Italian to me. He'd seen it all, right? So the janitor is like pushing his broom. And the pilgrim is like standing there, you know, open mouthed in astonishment, while Benedict is suspended in the air, about 5 feet in the air. And the janitor looks at the pilgrim and says, "The saint is in ecstasy," and then just goes sweeping the floor, you know. And I just love that so much.
It's not wrong.
Whatever, you know, these things happen. But that's what I love about the church. Has saints who, you know, people like Saint Robert Bellarmine, you know, not a dramatic sort of saint, you know, someone who worked for reform, or even frankly Saint Therese of Lisieux.
Mm-hmm.
You know, primarily, you know, what we know of her is her story of a soul and, you know, the testimony of her fellow sisters. But she lived, you know, by all outward measurements, she lived a fairly pedestrian life.
Well, that's, you know, it's what makes something sanctified is not whether or not it's epic in terms of scale or scope, but in terms of heart and desire. And
right, yeah, she lived a life devoted to God, and that's really what matters. But then again, you get these just wild saints, people like, I think my favorite is Saint Christina the Astonishing.
What a great title. I like that, you know. Okay.
And she's just, I mean, around the bend. Just beyond crazy things happened to her, including, you know, at her own funeral, she sat up in her coffin and started preaching. And, you know, just crazy things like this. Or, you know, the stuff that Saint Padre Pio did.
St. Lucia with the eyes, and I love how they depict the saints, like where they have like their plate with their eyes on them, and you're going, oh my God.
But, you know, this goes all the way back to the prophets. I mean, you look at some of the prophets and you think, I'm not altogether certain that guy was always quite right in the head, you know?
Locust and honey. Sounds good.
Well, or you get, you know, like Ezekiel, God tells him, you know, okay, I make a little model of the city of Jerusalem, and then I want you to lay on your side for a year naked.
Yeah.
You know, I wonder what's going on with that guy. But that's part of our tradition too, is, you know, so you get people like Saint Simeon Stylites, who spent like decades sitting on a pillar praying, you know, and having food hauled up to him, and his waist, dropped aboard at the bottom of the pillar, you know.
Very dramatic.
You know, and the church looks at these guys, especially these early saints, and says, what matters about them is their dedication to God. We will remain somewhat agnostic about the ways in which they express that dedication. And the church tends to like move us away from these kinds of dramatic penances and stuff, you know.
Well, the thing is, it's a human representation. These are all very human people. You can imagine someone being this extravagant. You can imagine someone being this, you know, going this over the top. Because, you know, even we have modern day people who, you know, do extravagant things, not for God, but, you know, for their own sakes, you know, whether they decide that they're going to, you know, we're not going to have any waste of any kind in our, you know, read profiles about people who are trying to be super eco and, you know,
right.
So we are a people who at least understand to some degree the idea of committing to an ideal to the extreme.
Well, you know, a friend of mine once said that a culture that invented the Stairmaster is not really a culture that's in a particularly good position to make fun of the penances of its ancestors.
This is true. Yeah. So,
yeah, I remember reading this article about, like, it was a whole thing on the kinds of regimes that, like Jessica Alba put herself through in order to put herself into training to look good for, well, I think like Van Helsing or, you know, one of those kinds of movies.
Right? Yes. Yes.
And it's just like this brutal regime.
Yes.
Over and over again. And it's all, why is it being done? Well, it's being done
for a cause, for a movie.
For a cause, you know. But the cause is, I'm going to pretend to be somebody who is at war with the devil in this movie.
Right.
And the early Christian saints weren't pretending.
Yeah, that's the big difference. Yes, that's the big distinction. But, I mean, it's, you know, you can see now somebody's going to write a book, Fitness with the Saints.
Yeah.
You know?
That's right. Yeah, so I just watched, I've been watching the series that Bishop Robert Barron did called The Pivotal Players.
Oh, yes.
And it's looking at Francis of Assisi and Thomas Aquinas and Michelangelo.
Mm-hmm.
And so not all saints, but all people who are crucial to our Christian tradition. To our Catholic tradition, and you know, G.K. Chesterton and John Henry Newman, and
a
couple of others whose names escape me at the moment because I haven't had enough sleep. But in his discussion of Francis, one of the things that he points out, he says, you know, Francis has been kind of tamed today, so
homogenized, sanitized.
Yeah, so we associate it with bird baths and garden statues and the little flowers.
Change the wolf, which makes the wolf look like a dog.
He is charming. That's true. But he says, you know, the thing to remember about Francis is that Francis was an alarming character too, and he upset and frightened his enemies. His contemporaries, as well as inspiring them, you know. And, you know, what would you think about somebody who comes to your house and sits down for dinner and says the blessing and then takes some ash from the fireplace and sprinkles it all over the dinner, all over his food, right? Well, this was routine for Francis. He would do those things as penances.
Yeah, it would probably brought the conversation to a screeching halt.
Yeah. You know? What are you doing? You know, my risotto, you know, you just sprinkled ash all over it. Well, you know, but this is somebody who cultivated a penitential life, among other things. And yet at the same time, of course, Francis is just everybody's favorite saint. I mean, Chesterton describes him as the man who could not get killed. So he went to the Crusades, you know, and he walked right into the Saracens' camp and said, I'll tell you what, how about we light a fire and you jump into it and I'll jump into it too, and we'll see who God saves. And the Sultan is like, you seem like a nice person. I don't think we're going to do this though. But I will give you safe passage out of my camp because you're obviously not a well person, you know.
Yeah.
But everybody, even the Muslims loved Francis. They liked him. They respected him. And his conversation with the Sultan was nothing but respectful. Which is remarkable, you know.
But that was part of his charism, is that he's had the sense of dignity of every creature, both, you know, and that included every human being. And that, you know, that's what made him so attractive. But, I mean, this is also the person who decided to strip naked in the square.
Right. Your dad.
Should have disturbed everyone, I would think.
Dad, your cloth is so important to you. Well, you can have it back, Dad. And Dad also is, you know, there's always something guileless and innocent about Francis. That's one of his charms, you know. So he does these kinds of crazy things. But, you know, once again, they don't lock him up in the goofy booth. He does manage, in fact, to... like wildfire, you know, spread this new movement of his because he was so attractive.
And it's still going. I mean, people still, that's probably the number one saint. If you ask people who their favorite saint is, he's probably going to be in the top 10.
Yeah. Well, he often beats out the apostles, you know. People look at him and they just can't help but be charmed by him. One of my favorite books, I think, of Chesterton's is his biography of St. Francis of Assisi, because Chesterton got what he called the theory of thanks. And we'll talk about that when we return. You're listening to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea. We're here today with Sherry Antonetti talking about Halloween and saints and all that on Redbox Media. We'll be back in just a minute.
If you enjoy listening to Mark Shea and all of his wonderful co-hosts here on Connecting the Dots, then consider becoming a friend of the show and provide your support today. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show. Thank you.
The Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea. And we are here today talking about, well, Halloween, but also about All Saints and talking about various saints that mean a lot to us. You know, the apostles mean a lot to me. But Francis, I want to read a little passage here that comes from G.K. Chesterton's magnificent biography on Francis, because... Ooh, that's cool sounding.
That was my phone. Sorry.
Okay. And I thought maybe you were playing Zelda or something.
Got it. Because I like that. Well, yeah. Okay.
Chesterton writes a book about St. Francis, and he does a really beautiful job of capturing the spirit of Francis. And I just wanted to read this little passage. He says, "For that is the full and final spirit in which we should turn to St. Francis, in the spirit of thanks for what he has done. He was, above all things, a great giver, and he cared chiefly for the best kind of giving, which is called thanksgiving. If another great man wrote a grammar of assent," he's referring there to Cardinal Newman, he may well be said to have written a grammar of acceptance, a grammar of gratitude. He understood down to its very depths the theory of thanks, and its depths are a bottomless abyss. He knew that the praise of God stands on its strongest ground when it stands on nothing. He knew that we can best measure the towering miracle of the mere fact of existence if we realize that, but for some strange mercy, we should not even exist.
Oh, I love it. That is
Isn't that magnificent? That's what, by the way, what the reading was yesterday from Wisdom. The reading from Wisdom yesterday was all about the fact that God gratuitously wills everything into existence.
Yes.
And that, The only reason that there is anything is because God holds it in being. And that, by the way, goes even for Satan. The only reason Satan exists is because God continues to will that creature who has completely rebelled against him to exist. He's given him being, and he's not going to ungive it. And the same thing goes for us. And so everything that exists, exists because God loves it. The thing that exists may not like that God loves it and experience the love of God as something horrible and repulsive that it hates and wants to escape. And
but God will not remove the gifts that he has given to the things that he's created.
And so we can pervert the gifts that God has given us, but God will keep giving as long as he can possibly give to us because he loves us. And this is the great paradox of our existence. And so how do we meet this gift that we couldn't possibly deserve? Well, there's no way you can get even with God.
Right.
You're never going to be able to try back, right? You can't say, okay, my debt to you is now paid. Your debt will never be paid, and that is the great goodness of our existence.
We're all the ungrateful servant that shows up that has a debt that we can never repay, that he forgives.
And that's joy. That's the goodness of it, because, of course, he's not looking for us to be even with him. What he wants for us is to participate in his life, and he loves us into being, and he holds us in being. And so part of what the Old Testament reading yesterday says is that he corrects us then little by little when we sin, because he knows what we're made of. And so he doesn't say, you have sinned, you must now perform 7 Herculean feats to get back in my good graces. On the contrary, the whole nature of grace is that it's grace. It's prior. You don't get into God's good graces. God's grace gets into you, and that's what turns you into a creature like him.
Yes.
So the whole gentleness of it is, you know, he's not expecting gigantic things from us all at once, but he is expecting put one foot in front of the other.
Yes.
A big grace, you know.
And it begins with a little yes. A yes, I fiat, very small. And, you know, I mean, I look at it from a standpoint of you don't become a full-fledged mother where you have to worry about college and, you know, and beyond and careers and whatnot for your child when you just find out you're pregnant. You start very small, and you learn to accommodate and surrender little by little by little. And it's not a surrender of meanness. It's a surrender of love.
Exactly. Exactly. And this is, you know, these are the things that the real saints show us. So, you know, when Paul talks about his existence in Christ, he says to the Corinthians, because the Corinthians are being a bunch of jackasses, and so he's trying to sort of establish his bona fides with them and say, yes, I'm a real apostle, you know, and here's why I'm an apostle. And what he appeals to, of course, is the fact that he has seen the risen Christ.
Yes.
And that he has been sent by the church and so forth. What he doesn't really appeal to are miracles, which he's done. I mean, he's worked miracles and he's had these amazing things happen to him. So he talks about having been taken up into the third heaven. And then after talking about these experiences that he had, he says, I've become a fool, but you drove me to it. One of the great passages out of Corinthians. But his point is that it's not because, and this is what Jesus points out as well, it's not because he's done great things in his name. Jesus says, you know, people are going to come to me on the last day and they're going to say, didn't you see that we, you know, we cast out demons and we worked miracles and did all this stuff? And I'll say to them, I never knew you. Depart from me, you workers of iniquity. Why? Because what makes you a saint is not doing some epic miracle. What makes you a saint is imitating Jesus.
Yes. The epic miracles. Yes.
Yeah. And so the epic miracles may happen, you know, if God wills, but there's lots of saints for whom we have no record of any miracles being done. So St. Elizabeth at Seton or Therese of Lisieux, for example, didn't do any of those things.
Mother Teresa, it's do little things with great love. When you want to change the world, right. Go home and love your family. That is what, that's what she's telling you. You can be a saint without necessarily doing epic big things. It's how much epic love you put into the little things that you're doing.
Right.
And everybody knows this because, if you're in a bad mood and your kid says, read a story, and you read a story, once upon a time, and there's no love, the kid gets it, and then you realize, I'm being a schmuck. And then you start over. And then you read it correctly because it has to be infused with love, or the whole purpose of reading the bedtime story is gone.
Exactly. Yeah, and part of what we have for us is because we've all failed in this regard is the sacrament of reconciliation, so that you can go and say,
thank goodness,
this is where I just suck and I'm sorry.
Yes, and I've sucked before now and I will suck again. And I know this. Thank you for not giving up on me.
Yes, indeed.
Though you have every reason.
Indeed. But that's, that again is what the reading from the reading from Wisdom yesterday was about, is that God does not give up. There is not a time when God says, I'm sick of you. It is possible for us to blind ourselves. We can, sin makes you stupid, and it is.
Yes.
It is possible for you to make yourself stupid.
Exhibit A, politics.
but at the same time, God is not. God never abandons us. He calls us back to mercy, and he keeps giving and giving. We can make ourselves into creatures who are unable to hear him.
Yes, Pope Francis says, God never tires of asking for mercy, and he never tires of giving it.
Right.
But we do get tired of asking, or thinking that we need to ask. And we can get kind of calcified and stuck, frozen in our sensibilities.
Right. And that's, that is something, where you want to keep asking for the grace of God.
Yes.
Open and pliant and, bring on the oil. Don't let it get calcified,
Yeah. Make a soft heart, create for me a new heart.
Exactly right. And that's, that's why we have All Saints Day and All Souls Day, especially All Souls Day, because we ask for the prayers of those who have passed on just as they need our prayers. And when we are praying in the Holy Spirit, we are, if you will, we're lubricating our hearts and keeping them pliant. So thanks be to God for the grace of God.
And it takes on, All Souls Day takes on a greater significance each year when you lose someone. It's really lovely when you have that day and you recall, and it's not the day they died, it's a day you remember them. And that's really just a beautiful way to reconnect with all the family or friends that you can't see here anymore.
It means a lot to me, especially because my dad died on November 5th. So this time of year always brings all that back. And so I'm grateful for All Souls Day because of that.
Happy Halloween, Mark.
Thank you. Happy Halloween. I want to thank Sherry Antonetti for being on the show today. Our producer today was Danny Head. And I'll be back tomorrow with Mr. Michael Litchens here on Connecting the Dots on Redbox Media. Until then, have a lovely evening. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcasts. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.